This is a recording by ISIS International from the 55th session of the UN Commission on the Status of Women held in New York from February 22nd to March 4th, 2011. ISIS International, documenting feminist visions, creating critical communications, and strengthening social movements.
So I'm just wondering if I can ask people your indulgence for a moment. I'm just wondering if you can raise your hand if you're 30 years and under. Wow. 30 or under, yeah. What about if you're in your 30s now? In your 40s? In your 50s? If you're 60 or older? So in this room we have a real demonstration of what leaders of different generations look like, right? And everyone is bringing their own wisdom to the room and their own leadership kind of abilities. And so you can see just the beginning seeds of setting the scene for the concepts around intergenerational leadership just by looking around the room and seeing who's here. So when you think about yourself and your own leadership journey, think about the value you bring to the organizations and groups that you're involved with. And think about how old you were when you started this work. And if there was ever a point when you considered yourself too young. Not other people, but yourself. and think about when you first started to really believe that you were making a contribution or a difference. Now consider the knowledge and skills of other women who work with you. And how they're different from your own, and how together you make a stronger, more effective team because of that diversity of experience you bring to whatever it is that you're working on, whatever initiative or endeavor. And really, that's the power of intergenerational leadership. And intergenerational leadership is a passion in the YWCA. We know that an intergenerational model of leadership makes us stronger as an organization because the global challenges we're facing, so whether we're talking about violence against women or whether we're talking about barriers to the full achievement of our sexual and reproductive health rights or whether we're talking about work around HIV and AIDS, we know that those are challenges faced by women in all of our diversities across the life cycle, right? So we know that global challenges are not targeting women who are experienced leaders only, right? They're targeting women in their localities around the world at any age. And because of that, we know that it's logical that the solutions will also be created by intergenerational leadership, leaders working together for change. Because that's the nature of the challenges that we're facing, and that's the nature of the solutions that we need to bring to our work in social justice. And certainly, Katrina talked about the concept that full engagement of young women isn't an overnight sort of achievement that organizations are going to have. That there's all kinds of different issues and considerations that even if you think, okay, I'm really committed and I'm going to do this tomorrow, it's still going to be a process. So there's lots of different strategies that organizations are using to support young women's leadership and the concept of being truly intergenerational as leaders. And one of the strategies that we've used in the YWCA as a framework is what would be called a quota system. So in 2007, when we adopted a new constitution at the World YWCA, that constitution has a mandate that leadership bodies in the YWCA will be at least 25% young women. And I'm always emphasizing that at least. So it's not that we get to 25% and we're good, but we're looking at least 25%. And young women in the YWCA is age 30 and under, which is why I asked that at the beginning. So we also have, in addition to having a constitution that now has that mandate, we also have an internal quality assessment tool that's called the Standards of Good Management and Accountability, and it also asks all of our national member associations about whether or not they're succeeding at having at least 25% young women on their boards. So it's a global tool that we're looking at all levels of the organization to support young women's leadership. And so it's been almost 4 years right, since we passed the Constitution. And we've just done a four-year review across the movement to see how are we doing on a number of different issues and levels. And we find that while we have still only in 4 years a relatively small percentage of YWCAs across the world who actually have succeeded at already having at least 25% young women in leadership, we have many more who are working toward that intergenerational model. So what we know is that the process of actually achieving the goal that we've set takes time, but what we have achieved around the world is a commitment to intergenerational leadership and a commitment to supporting young women's leadership. So really, we will take the steps together as we go, and I'll talk about sort of some co-strategies that we have around the quota system. But we know that what we're doing is we're moving things forward by, in most parts of the world, having that commitment for change. And right now, one of our success markers is that on our world board, so the board that's leading our organization at a world level, who's interacting in global spaces like CSW, we have 55% women who are 30 and under. So more than half. So when people say to us, well, I don't know, young women, it's a lot of responsibility, I'm not really sure it's going to work. We can say with integrity and with credibility that it does work. That it works really well, and that having an effective model of intergenerational leadership means that whatever age you're at and whatever locality you're coming from, you can come together to create positive change. And our program and advocacy committee, which I chair on the board, actually is 100% young women, age 30 and under. And we're doing amazing work around supporting and sort of framing global advocacy, and also looking at our programs and the sustainability and the relevancy to women in communities. And we're doing that sort of at the age that we are and in our own context, and it's working very well. In order for our quota system to be successful, we didn't just vote on a constitution and say, okay, that's it, we're done now, obviously, right? We needed some other kind of strategies to accompany that. So the first piece was actually, we had a four-year process before the Constitution passed of dialogue and trust building. Because, as you might imagine, not everyone was really on board with the idea at the beginning. So we had a huge global consultation around fears and hopes, around barriers and possibilities. And we had some really frank discussions. So we had discussions with older and more experienced women about fear that their legacy would not be respected or cared for, that the organization might fall apart or fail in the hands of younger or less experienced women, fear that they might be pushed out or pushed away, or that their leadership would be deemed irrelevant by younger women, or fears around loss of identity. Because when you found a movement and when it's your legacy, when you're removed from that situation, that's a huge part of who you are. So we needed to have those conversations. Not to pretend that those things weren't important, but to actually put that on the table and talk about it. And we had to have frank discussions with young women as well about fear that, as Katrina mentioned, that they might be tokens at the table, right? Without power, but they're there, so we can tick the box. Or fear that there would be no safe space to talk about the issues important to young women. Or on the other side, fear that young women might be expected to only talk about young women's issues and not contribute to the overall leadership of the organization. So we had to put all of that on the table and have those discussions, both in separate groups with older and younger women, but also together, so that we could really talk about how can we come to a point where we can trust each other to move forward together, knowing that we will make mistakes, right? But knowing that that's okay as long as we're still committed to the process. And another piece of the dialogue was really looking back at our roots and looking at us as the Young Women's Christian Association, right? And a part of my research around young women's leadership was actually to look back in our policy statements from our previous world meetings. And we actually had a resolution in 1938 which spoke to young women's leadership, and it said, "We believe that youth should share creatively in the Young Women's Christian Association, locally, nationally, and internationally. Toward that end, we recommend to national associations the necessity for including young women on boards and committees so that they may take their full share in the policy and program of the association. So our foremothers in 1938 already understood the incredible value of this intergenerational leadership. And so we brought to the table that legacy of belief in and an understanding of the power of young women's leadership. And it went into the discussion about fears and hopes and possibilities and challenges so that we could really see we really already have competency in this. So let's build on that for the future. One of the other things that we've talked a lot about in the movement is about having meaningful leadership opportunities for young women. So there's a young woman in our delegation here at CSW who's called Nina, who's from YWCA Finland. And she actually sits on a board that is not today, but was a few years ago, 100% young women who are 30 and under. And she talks about what an incredible leadership opportunity that was for that group of young women, and how they really were incredibly supported, and that the women who had been on the board previously were always only a phone call away or would always come to a meeting, so that they really felt that they could exercise their own leadership but in a safe space. But she also says that now they have some older women on their board as well, and that she says she really sees the value of that intergenerational space, that the wisdom and experience and tradition of the YWCA are right there in the room with them when they meet. And she said it's so much more powerful and they're so much stronger group to be able to have those intergenerational connections. And that there's still the meaningful leadership opportunity, but that the intergenerational piece makes it just that much richer and more effective. We also, of course, talked about the concept of strength in numbers, which is where the quota system came from, right? So certainly there's lots of research around diversity and inclusion that says if you have three or more of whatever that minority group is, that it's more likely to be successful. People are more likely to feel included and more likely to be able to actually participate, right? And we know that it can be a really lonely road for a single young woman invited to participate, and sometimes for her to be even expected herself to shift the culture of the organization. Okay, you're the young woman, now you can fix it. I was speaking with another one of the young women in our delegation earlier, called Quena from YWCA Lesotho, and she talked a bit about her experience in her organization where there's certainly support for the idea of young women's leadership, and people have certainly been really supportive toward her, but it's still sort of this unspoken expectation that she'll recruit the young women, and she'll get the young women interested, and she'll make young women's leadership work in the organization. Not that it's a collective responsibility. So although she feels that support as an individual being there, there's still a need for that sort of cultural shift to say, we collectively are committed to intergenerationally leading this organization, and we collectively are going to make it work. We also have a commitment to leadership training and skills building across the whole organization, but also for young women specifically. And one of the programs that YWCA Australia actually is running, which some of you may already know about, is a trainee program for young women who are interested in sitting on boards. So that program will run each year, usually around August, and it will provide skills training on reading financial statements, on governance, on some of the technical skills that young women are looking for in terms of being on boards, and that training then supports that capacity building to actually have a full and rich experience as a board member. We also have a program in Quebec City in Canada called Leader et Décisionnel, and that program actually is similar in the leadership training component, but it then pairs a young woman with an older woman board member, not necessarily on the YWCA board, but on any board in the city. And that young woman will shadow with that older woman for a year to learn about what it's like to be on a board. So, and it's not a mandatory, you don't have to do that to be on the YWCA board. It's really a learning experience for young women who are saying, I kind of like to test the waters a bit before I jump in. And that's also been quite a successful training opportunity for young women. One other story I'll just share with you is around the importance of space for innovation and change. for young women to really be able to come in and make a difference and to be trusted to do that. So at YWCA Belize, they actually have a young woman on their board who's only 16. And I was really curious about how she ended up on the board because it's sort of an unusual story. So I asked Alifa how Shira, who's the young woman, actually ended up on the board, and she said she came to our association and she noticed that our youth programs were really kind of defunct, right? And she was really passionate about reviving those youth programs. So she recruited young people to be part of the youth program. She became the youth group coordinator. She books the space, she runs the meetings, she leads the initiatives. And the general secretary at YWCA actually, in recognition of that initiative and leadership capacity, actually invited her to sit on the board. So Shira is a sort of a full board member. She's not in any kind of a junior capacity, but she actually is a really important contributing member of that board. And like Katrina mentioned, it was in recognition of the leadership capacity that she'd shown, and then she was invited, right? So that importance of the invitation. So when we say intergenerational leadership in the YWCA, what we really mean is the opportunity to share as equals, respecting experience that each other brings to the table, continuing to dialogue about fears and hopes and challenges and successes, like in any relationship, not being afraid to have those conversations because that's what allows you to actually deal with anything that comes up and make it better, and really to have space for mistakes. So I'll just leave you with a really incredible leadership experience that I had in the YWCA. When I came for my first CSW, our general secretary, Nyerad Zagambotsvanda, organized a meeting with Asha Rose Magero here at the UN. And she said to me, Jess, you'll come as my vice president, you'll come as part of the team, and you'll sit in at this meeting. And I didn't really know Nyerad Zai that well at the time, so I really couldn't anticipate what was coming. So I came to this meeting, and Nyerad Zai introduced herself, and she introduced me as a young woman vice president. And then she said, and Jessica, in recognition of our commitment to young women's leadership, is going to make the presentation to you in this meeting. So then I had the opportunity as a young woman to sit with Asha Rose and actually have a conversation about the work of the YWCA and the importance of young women's leadership. Something that I never ever dreamed was an experience I would ever have. And I certainly never dreamed I would have a voice in that kind of a space. And for me, really, that is the power of the YWCA, to take the voice of young women from communities around the world and to lift it into global policy spaces so that we actually have an opportunity to make a difference and to make change. So in closing, I would just like to ask each of you to close your eyes for a moment and just to picture a young woman in your life. Someone that you know and that you respect. And just to think about how you can support her leadership. Can you share your network? Can you invite her to sit on a board? Can you hire her? Can you recommend her for a leadership opportunity? What can you do to provide that support? And how soon can you start? So I'll invite you to mentally make an appointment in your calendar or BlackBerry or Daytimer to connect with this young woman, to support young women's leadership. And to think about the fact that really, it's you that has the power to make young women's leadership and intergenerational leadership work. So I invite you to keep that appointment whenever you set it for, and to help us on our journey toward intergenerational leadership across the world.
This speech was brought to you by ISIS International. For more audio reports, please visit the ISIS website at www.isisinternational.org.